Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We got a treat here for all the kids today. We got ice cream for all the Baltimore County executives, brought to you by our friends at Taharka Made here in Baltimore, just like Johnny O, Don Moeller, and myself, serving up the social change through things like pistachio, if you're feeling a little out there, and vanilla bean if you're a little more conservative for the political taste. Stay Fair is there with chickens and waffles and the shrimp and grits. At some point, we're going to get El Guapo open so I can have a quesadilla, a proper one over in Catonsville as well. And we're shipping those crab cakes all over the world from Fadley's in Lexington Market to you. They're coming to Catonsville as well. And I have a feeling Don Moeller, Johnny O, and you will be over there when they do christen the good ship Fadley's on Frederick Avenue.
I think there's a good chance that we might have a crab cake over there. What do you think, Mr. Exec?
I think it's we have to, right? I like that Fadley's on Frederick, though. That's a good tagline.
There we go.
I come up with a million of them. Johnny O is here, former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller, of course, our partner in crime and current Baltimore County Executive. Johnny, I'll just begin this because there's a million directions we can go in, and we're doing elections and voting and all of that. Kamala Harris, but the one thing I want to say, because I haven't talked to you through all this COVID, we haven't been together. I really do have incredible respect for all of you who have to make these decisions about closing and opening. And I see wretched things written about you from time to time on my Facebook. I block them all and get rid, I promise. this has been a real test. And we had Jim Smith on 2 weeks ago. Just a real test for anybody to be sitting in that chair right now. And I think I know Don agrees with me on that.
100%. That's right. Go ahead, Don. I'm sorry.
No, go, Johnny. Go.
I was going to say, I don't think anyone runs for this job expecting to have to lead and govern during a global pandemic. And, you know, I ran because I wanted to make county government even more responsive, more open, more transparent, to build schools and continue on the legacy that Don and his predecessors left. And COVID has punched all of us in the gut. And it's really required the best of all of us to get through this. And, you know, the sad truth is we're not through this. We're still very much in the middle of it. We understand more. We know a little bit more about what's required. But until there's a vaccine and until it's widely administered, we know that we're limited in what we can do. And so we're sort of trying to both address the public health aspect of keeping our people safe and preventing them from dying. I mean, we're well over 13,000 cases now in Baltimore County, and we've lost over 500 of our neighbors to this terrible virus. But at the same time, we know that there is an economic toll to this. And just for perspective, the first 3 weeks in Maryland, we've lost more jobs in 3 weeks than we did through the entirety of the Great Recession. And so we don't know what the bottom of this looks like or what the recovery looks like. So we're trying to manage the fact that people are struggling with their jobs, and parents are trying to figure out virtual learning as they, you know, manage their own responsibilities and obligations, and childcare is difficult. I think that being disconnected has led to, you know, we don't know the long-term impacts of especially our youngest kids, the social isolation, the mental health issues. I mean, this is really challenging us on a whole number of fronts. How do we keep our businesses afloat? How do we get through on the other side? How do we provide the PPE, the testing, the contact tracing? But government's responsibility is to fill those gaps and provide for our neighbors, whatever the situation is. And we didn't expect this, but that's exactly what we're doing, stepping up and filling those voids.
Well, Johnny, you mentioned there's so much in there to unpack. Let's start with the whole childcare school aspect, because you really are in a unique situation. You're not only are you the county executive, your wife's a successful, worker out there, and a successful employee, and you both have a young daughter, a preschool daughter. So you feel what people are saying to you, man, this is hard. You're saying, hey, I got it. What's your perspective as a young parent trying to figure out how childcare is going to look, how school is going to look? Walk us through that in the Olszewski household.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head, Don. I mean, the first thing is to say, look, we get it. So just for context, when I issued, before the governor did, the universal mask requirement, and CDC says if you're older than two, because you can spread it, you should be wearing it in public areas and indoors. People were like, you know, this is really hard. And I'm like, yeah, I get it. My daughter for the longest time did not want to wear a mask. And that's hard. And it's hard on the childcare front. It's hard on the work front. We're fortunate that our preschool is back indoors and in person. She's wearing the mask while she's there. But I literally can relate to it. And I don't know what the answer would be if she were in school, either kindergarten or the later grades. And Marissa, who works for Howard County government and through my responsibilities, I don't know how we'd be able to provide that in-home instruction and supervision if she weren't in school. And so it's real. We just actually released an RFI inviting our childcare provider partners across the region to give us ideas as school is starting, what we can be doing to provide additional solutions, because this is a real challenge. And it's one more layer. It's, you know, people worrying about childcare and taking care of their kid and ensuring their kid gets the instruction. It's the broadband, it's the internet access. It's it's, you know, if kids have multiple children, but maybe not a device for all of our kids. It's, you know, the meals that our kids aren't getting. It's the fact that there are some kids that need so special, you know, Don, you and I are both, you know, former educators. And then that's just the basic needs. And then we know that, you know, we've had to put over $4 million out the door for eviction preventions with the county school system. We've served almost 5 million meals. So we know that there's incredible need out there. Food insecurity is growing. There's questions about, just really any one of these issues by themselves would be a really daunting task to tackle, but we're being forced to tackle them all at the same time. And then frankly, to build the infrastructure to do it from the ground up in no time. I mean, we're 5 months into the pandemic and our first case in the state of emergency. Baltimore County relied on partners like the Maryland Food Bank before who we supported strongly. I know you supported and we've continued that support, but frankly, the infrastructure wasn't enough to meet the needs. So we've had to scale up and really do large scale food delivery. And it's just one example though, of many places where, you know, we're just trying to meet the need as best we can. And we're lucky we've got so many great employees who are helping us bridge that gap.
For all the responsibilities that both of you have had, and Kevin before you, and all the county executives, the education thing is specific, I think, to this conversation, because both of you were educators and are educators. I guess once you are, you always are. But just in your own mind as educators, forget all the other responsibilities both of you have had sitting in that chair and what you bear right now, Johnny, but the education part of this, it's almost overwhelming in that, Don, all the years in education, it's something that no one's ever been tasked to think about before, right? Like that our society anywhere has never really been thought, it is never thought through having a four-year-old child, working parents, and no such thing as a school for them to go to.
I think that's, we'll ask Johnny to weigh in. I think that's absolutely true. And Mr. Exec, my concern, and I'm sure it's one that keeps you up at night as well, is that I worry, because you just described it beautifully. I worry about the mom and dad, the backbone of our nation, those ones who are perhaps hourly employees. They can't work remotely from home. They have to go to work. And in a couple of weeks, through fault of no one, school is going to be remote. And those moms and dads are going to be faced with, how do I provide for my family, or how do I take care of my child's education? And my concern, Mr. Exec, is that the whole gap in learning is just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, because as people at certain income levels, they'll be able to navigate this easier than those hard men and women who are getting out, I'll call, you know, the lunch pail worker. It's harder for them.
Yeah, it forces impossible choices, and it exacerbates what we already know. I mean, we see the disparate health outcomes. We see that people who are poorer or communities of color tend to have worse health outcomes. And some of that's underlying health conditions, and some of that is just they don't have access, or people who are poorer don't have more space to self-quarantine and isolate. There are lots of underlying issues here, and the school and the childcare piece is one that, as you said, as educators, I think really concerns us both, because we do worry about the achievement gap. It's real, it's persistent, and this crisis threatens to make it much worse than it already is. And that's both in terms of what parents can provide, it's in terms of the internet access. And I think it really demands that the changes we were trying to do pre-COVID, that we're paying even more attention to, about the differentiated staffing, about the upstream investments, about expanding pre-K, about providing those additional resources, so that, you know, because the gap is going to be wider, and we have to work twice as hard to close it on the other side of this thing. I think we have an obligation to mitigate it as best we can now, through those child care supports that we're trying to explore, through bridging the digital divide. But, you know, again, it takes time to stand some of these answers and solutions up. They're not going to be perfect all the time, because we haven't done this before. But, you know, we try to mitigate as best we can, and then we really try to go back and recover. But it tugs on our hearts. I mean, Nestor, you're right. Once you're an educator, you're always an educator. You always think about those students or those families who just really are special to you. And you know that those stories are all over our county and our state and our country, frankly.
You mean 38 years later that Don Mohler and I'd be doing Baltimore Positive together with you? You mean that sort of thing? That sort of
You're always an educator. Well, you know, Johnny, one of the really challenging things, and Nestor alluded to it earlier, is they're never easy decisions. And you're out there and you're talking with this, particularly the small business owner, all of the time. And I know you've got your economic development folks tuned in and everybody's trying to help. What are you hearing from small businesses from, you know, Essex all the way over to Lansdowne?
And Johnny, I heard you getting screamed at in April and May, and I literally saw you the next day talk to business owners. They said, I talked to Johnny. Like, I know you were on the phone, like, talking to these people when they were flaming angry, right? Literally. Yeah.
Well, I mean, again, like, it's that balance of how do we track our numbers? And we stood up the first ever county stat full team, and that's been converted to a COVID stat team. And we track everything from PPE to positivity, which is heading in the right direction. We're under, you know, we're around 4% now in Baltimore County. We track our it's been the lowest since March. We check our hospital rates, our ICUs, our ventilator usage. And at the time when, you know, we first were reopening, we made the hard decision to say, we're going to have to go a little slower because we're not there yet. We didn't have the PPE. We didn't have the numbers where we wanted them. We didn't have the things in place, the contact tracing. But we moved quickly to stand all that up. And then we've gotten to a place where we were able to do that. It hasn't helped, frankly, that we learn about changes from the state by press conference. I mean, I think that collaboration really matters, particularly in a time of crisis. And, you know, a lot of state officials have been great with our people. But I haven't spoken to the governor in over 2 months. And that's not because I haven't asked you. I consistently ask every time. I think this is a time where we have to pull together. But we, you know, we're really trying to move together. I'm grateful that we have 8 of the other large jurisdictions are at the table every week. We're talking about how to support each other and partner. It's why, you know, Nestor, we did the mask order before the state did, because we want to keep our businesses open. And it was a question of you following the science to say, what's the best thing that we can do to both allow people to go shopping, to be engaging in commerce without jeopardizing public health? And so it's really that balancing act, but we're going to keep doing what works. Keeping socially distanced, practicing hygiene, wearing masks, because it's recognizing that all these things come to bear, and that's our obligation is to weigh them. I think we're in a good place. We're fully aligned with the state now. Actually, once we became aligned several months ago, we've pretty much followed along with the state's changes. And, you know, one of the things you learn in politics, Don, right, is you got to develop thick skin, and you try to just make the best decisions given the information you have. And you have to be empathetic and understand that people are going to disagree. But I always want people to know that they have a forum. So we have actively engaged with trade associations, individual businesses. It's why we pushed over $10 million of grant programs out the door to support our small businesses in particular. Most recently, we have a reimbursement program for any small business that is doing infrastructure costs. So if it's a carryout window or plexiglass or cleaning supplies, things that they wouldn't have had to incur because of COVID, we're trying to say you shouldn't be penalized because you had to incur this to keep yourself safe and to stay open. We had small grant programs in the amount of $15,000 that we pushed out for businesses that didn't get the PPP and other support when there was the stay-at-home orders. It's not perfect, and we know there are going to be people who are left behind, both individuals and businesses, but we're trying to keep our economy and our public health system strong so that we do come out on the other side of this and we can really focus on recovery.
Well, we are chatting with Baltimore County Executive John Olszewski Jr., trying to manage a government, fund a government, keep everybody safe, get kids back to school, get people to work. And then in the midst of this, Mr. County Executive, we have the horrific murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis, among other horrific murders in the United States. And one of the things that's been a little frustrating to me, and I want to give you some oxygen to talk about it, is that you really rather rapidly didn't sit around and wait for others to act. When you saw what was happening with George Floyd and others, you stepped up and you took executive action to really address some of the needed reforms. And I know there's a lot going on, but I don't think it's gotten the kind of attention that it should have. And I want you to talk a little bit about what prompted your executive action and what was included in it in Baltimore County.
Yeah, Don, I really appreciate you raising that issue. I mean, George Floyd's murder shined a light on what we already knew about how our African-American communities and neighbors have had less than ideal interactions with members of the police. And I am grateful for the work of the men and women of our police department. We actually had our numbers down across the board in all major categories. My brother's on the police force. But we know that people, we have to do better. And George Floyd's murder screamed for reform. We actually started that conversation last December when Senator Charles Sidnor gave us information about traffic stop data that showed that African Americans were disproportionately not only pulled over, but cited. So we created an equitable policing work group last December to start having this conversation. But George Floyd's death, I think, prompted me to say that we have to act, like local leaders have to act. After being in the protests and rallies, especially with our young people, it demanded action. And so we stepped up, and Chief Hyatt, I give her a lot of credit. She worked with me to figure out a package of administrative reforms where we said we are going to do across the board implicit bias training for all officers. We are going to do an outside review of our hiring and promotion practices to see how do we make sure our department reflects the diversity of the communities we serve. We changed our use of force policy. We added a sanctity of life provision. We added a duty to intervene provision. We expanded the equitable policing scope and expanded the membership and made it permanent. We really said we have to do more in this space, and I'm proud of what we're doing. And what's actually really encouraging is a lot of the conversation has been about the legislation the county council recently considered and opted to table in a very close vote. But most of what was in that bill would just have codified in law what we're already doing administratively. So I don't want people to think reform isn't happening. And I think the council's decision sort of reaffirms the urgency of making sure that we're proceeding with our reforms. But also, look, I think that there's a real energy out there. If people want to see this codify, we want to make it so ingrained in the culture that it doesn't matter whether it's law or not, but I understand why people want to see police reform passed in legislation. And so I actually spoke to Councilman Jones recently and working with him to find out what the path forward is with he and the county council. I've spoken with other members because this urgency, this moment requires local leaders to act and to have an urgency about it. And, we are acting. And I appreciate the opportunity to outline some of what we're doing, but we're going to keep pushing. We're going to keep reforming, and until every single citizen in Baltimore County is satisfied and feels like they're having that relationship, we're going to keep pushing.
Well, it did look, Johnny, I've looked carefully at Councilman Jones's legislation, and I've looked carefully at the executive order, and as you said, they really in many, many ways mirror one another. There are similar components to both. It looks to me, and as you said, talks are continuing and you're going to work with the council to see if you can codify it. One of the hot button issues that comes up, and it's impossible to discuss this without talking about it, is the issue of chokeholds. Now, mm-hmm. I don't know that specifically your executive order mentioned chokeholds. So I'm going to ask you, did it? And moving forward, do you think the issue of chokeholds is something that we need to look at?
It didn't, and it was one of those things that was meant to be part of the overall review. So in addition to the sanctity of life and duty to intervene, the police department was undertaking and is undertaking a full review of all their use of force. And I explicitly mentioned to the chief that I wanted to see the banning of chokeholds be part of it. We don't teach it in our academy. It is currently an out-of-policy use of force. So, you know, it's one of those things of like, we don't teach it. They're not supposed to, our officers aren't supposed to do it, but then should we make it enshrined in law? And I, you know, I actually support doing that. And so as we have those conversations, it will be one of the things that we're going to push for in terms of, I think what will be a revised piece of legislation with Councilman Jones, with the council. And frankly, I think that's one of the things that there's consensus around from the council. And if there wasn't, I can say that, you know, I think that they're going to continue the legislative conversation, which we're going to engage in. But if not, I mean, I'm prepared to take action as necessary. So there's that. And then we're also just listening across the board about what else people want to see, what we're missing. We just released, as I mentioned, I think on the crime piece, our first part of the dashboard, which shows crime across the county down. It shows sort of the different categories by precinct, by zip code. We're going to be pushing forward additional dashboards on use of force, complaints against police officers, and traffic stop data. And then we also are going to be pushing, because a lot of this isn't all just local. Part of this is a conversation for the state legislature. So part of the reforms we announced pursuing is the Maryland Public Information Act. And so disciplinary records, like we can't tell people based on Maryland law what happens in a use of force case that's really egregious, for example, and is public. And so we're going to seek to have the legislature make that information more available. And, you know, people are asking those questions because we've also made body cam footage much more available. We have, I think county executive cabinets with your support, Don, was really smart to have body worn cameras be put on our officers. We took the next step by making a policy on how to actually have this this footage released. And it shines a light. I mean, I think we want to both show those positive interactions that people are having, but I think it also demands that we do better. So we're listening, we're engaging the work group, and we're trying to figure out what other next steps need to happen.
Well, Johnny, it's interesting. You talk about leadership, and I appreciate that you bring up county executive cabinets. We had, and to his credit, I'll say, Scott Schellenberger, we had a few months back, we had state's attorney Scott Schellenberger. And he came on the show and he said, he told Nestor, he said, Nestor, I got to tell you, this is one that Don and Kevin got right. And I was on the wrong side of. And I laughed and I said, well, Scott, you and I have had a great relationship. I appreciate it. He said, no, he said, look, I'm willing to step forward and say when I was wrong. And Scott had a lot of misgivings at the time. He said,
well, more transparency is more trust, right? For everyone, literally.
But Scott was worried about the workload and other issues. And what he's found out is it's made police officers more effective and it's made the public's behavior better. And to the leadership point, Johnny, I guess that sometimes people can forget is that county executive cabinets moved forward with that, overruling a police review task force that suggested that Baltimore County go slowly in its implementation of body cameras. Mm-hmm. And Kevin agonized over that decision, but I can still remember him walking into my office and saying, we've got to do this. I'm going to get beat up. People are not going to be happy, but there's something in me that tells me if we don't get out in front of this, we're going to always be playing catch up. And of course, the rest is history, as the rest of the state has rushed to catch up with the county's implementation. Now, Johnny, also, you gave me a warm feeling because I feel like, yeah, that's where we wanted to go. Right as I turned over the keys to you, I said, I think you know, you've got a great IT department. They're champing at the bit to get this public information up and make the county more transparent. And I want you to talk more about the, getting the crime stats on the dashboard so communities can go up to check it out. Because again, there's so much going on, people could miss it. And this is a really major breakthrough that your administration just unveiled in the past week or so.
Yeah, and Don, you deserve a lot of credit. You really had things teed up. I mean, between the IT department and 311, which is now up and running, I mean, all the pieces were in place. And Nestor, to your point, it's not just trust. I mean, account openness and transparency builds trust, but it also builds accountability. And so that's what these dashboards are about. It's saying, here's what's happening in our communities. And so the good news is across the board, all of the major crime, burglary, homicide, shootings, domestic violence is across the board. Homicides are down 15%. Burglaries down 35%. Robberies are down 30%. Motor vehicle theft is down 15%. Theft is down 24, assault 24, theft, I think 23. So, I mean, it's really good data. We don't want to sit on it though, because it's halfway through the year and, you know, we want to always keep making progress. Any crime, any increase is unacceptable. You set the bar really high, Don. So having decreases,
<I don't know.
laughs> crime was already really low. And that's what people need to understand about Baltimore County is this. If we can announce decreases on top of what's already really low numbers is really impressive. But I think that's what people love about this county is it's a safe place to live and work. Our school system is great. And now we're trying to take these dashboards and these program reviews and just make it all more accessible. And we have an open budget. We've done it. We're doing town halls in all seven council districts. We're sharing our information. People this year will be able to go down to the contract level and see where their dollars are being spent. So it's that sense of openness and transparency, but also accountability that we're trying to, you know, inject, not just into the police department. This isn't just a police reform conversation. This is a government-wide conversation because, you know, people deserve to know what's happening in public works and in the environment and in public health as much as they do with public safety. And Don, you really do deserve a lot of credit. You've really sort of, you had us teed off to really sort of hit the ground running with a lot of these initiatives.
Well, thank you for that. But, you know, Johnny, what I didn't have, I may have had it teed up, but I certainly didn't have to govern in the midst of a pandemic. But last time we talked to you, I think it was around budget time. Everyone we talked to, I mean, all of the experts that we, and Nestor and I have interviewed a bunch of them, they keep saying that people don't have a clue what state and local governments are up against in terms of the fiscal impact of COVID. Give us a sense, because I know you're not just looking a month out, you're looking a year out, 2 years out. Give us a sense of what this is going to mean for the people of Baltimore County and for those of you trying to manage it.
So in just this current fiscal year budget, we thought we were going to have, well, we, just for context, we have about $150 million of new spending requests from the school system, $50 million in new spending requests from general government. And we had about $40 million of new money that we could have applied. About $7 million of that could have been operating. So seven of that $200 million we could have spent. The other 33 was going to be capital PAYGO, where we were poised to do more PAL centers and more road paving. And
is that where you were going to put the pool on the roof at Colgate Elementary?
We were totally ready. Although you should go check out, you should go check out some of the new schools that are being.
I've been driving by.
He loves his Colgate, man.
I'm just saying, that's really good.
Come on, you sound like an Eastwood guy now, dogging Colgate. Don't be doing that on me now. As long as we have enough money to finish Colgate, I'm good.
It's good.
All right.
And we actually have hundreds of millions of dollars pre-funded if the state finishes their job to do even more schools, but.
But in all sincerity, all these things we talk about, body cam, making things better, all the improvements you want to make, we're also up against a shortfall here that, I mean, and I don't hear you throwing numbers out because I don't think you want to be predictive. I don't think anybody really knows because, to your point, we're not through this. We're not on the other side of this. Whatever the prediction would be now, it could be better or worse 6 months from now. This is really, you know, for every municipality in the country, this is true. And it's true for our whole economy.
So we, just for perspective, we not only did we take that $40 million off the table, that got wiped away, but we had to cut $150 million. So unfortunately, our schools didn't take a cut, but they were level funded instead of having a 20-some million dollar increase over maintenance of effort. Our community college was level funded. There were no, you know, our employees came back to the table. They were supposed to get a salary increase at the beginning of the year. They deferred that to the very last day of the year. So there was a lot of sacrifice to get us to a point where we were able to find a balanced budget without sort of hurting our priorities. And we're at a point now where we are really taking every nickel we can find and putting it into fund balance because we don't know what the back end of this is. We were fortunate that Congress did pass the CARES Act, which gave us about $140 million to respond to the crisis. So that's how we're paying for the testing and the PPE and the contact tracing. And that's all the health response, some of the economic response, because that would be more money we'd have to find. But the out-year projections are scary. And we're looking at 20% reductions in state and local government budgets as currently projected for the next two fiscal years. And when you think about over 90% of your budgets are people, I don't know how absent additional federal support and or dipping into our rainy day fund and or other solutions, the economic crisis is still looming. We haven't seen the worst of it yet, even though we're starting to see the impacts of it in this budget. So we try to remind folks, we have our department heads are gearing up for mid-year cuts if that becomes necessary. But we're really trying to prioritize our people, our schools, and public safety. So far, we've avoided furloughs and layoffs, but we're going to keep collaborating with our employee groups, with the council, and we're hoping that the steps we've taken really keeps us positioned to weather this storm.
Johnny, we have, before we let you get out of here, we have to ask you, because we recently read, and boy, it brought home the impact of COVID, that a good friend of Baltimore Positive, and he's joined us and been very helpful from time to time, Dr. Gregory Branch, your health director, ended up announcing he himself had COVID. How's Dr. Branch doing? And we certainly want you to give him our best.
Yeah, thank you. I'm sure he will appreciate that. Dr. Branch is on the road to recovery. We are grateful for his leadership in this time. And, you know, honestly, he has used his case as just a reminder of how prevalent this thing is. And, you know, he's practicing all the right protocols of hand washing and, you know, all the best advice, but he got it. And so I think it's a stark reminder of how serious this thing is. We're glad that he's on the road to recovery. I'm just sorry that, he was almost on CNN, but there was, a COVID story from Major League Baseball that bumped him in the last second. So he was on, he almost got his 5 minutes in national.
Oh, man, he would have had an acronym for them. He'd have had a special phrase that would have.
Well, I hope at some point we can go back to going to baseball games and hanging out at the Catonsville 4th of July parade and doing all the things that we've been known to do. We really appreciate you taking time. And I know it's been very, very taxing on everyone in public service, and we appreciate you being on the wall out there in Baltimore County. And I love especially when you brag about the school systems, because this is living proof that it all works out, right?
That's right. Guys, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for sharing a positive message for Baltimore and for the region.
Thank you very much, Kang Executive. Yep. Nestor, take us out of here.
We appreciate all of our sponsors, including our friends at State Fair in Catonsville, as well as El Guapo, and in the city, if Fadley's coming to the county, you can ship those crab cakes anywhere. You get that Taharka ice cream anywhere in the world. I think I've got the Wake and Bake here. Coffee ice cream with the fudge swirl and the chunks and the fudge brownies. It's low fat. Sure it is. I'm Nestor. He's Don Moeller. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Calm, Local, and Baltimore Positive.